And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
You know, I think your brain produces a chemical that blocks out my voice.
What?
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Santa Barbara and Ventura Counties. Every show has a theme, and our theme today is an examination of consumption in America. All of my guests have interesting subjects on different sides of the consumption issue. My next guest examines the credo of the second half of the 20th century on into the 21st century, which is faster, cheaper, better. She understands the nine levers transforming how work gets done. We'll discuss thinking outside the costs as manufacturers reevaluate further increases in productivity. And as always, if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Lisa Hirschman is a seasoned business professional and author who brings real-world experience and an innovative style to her position at Hammer & Company. Prior to joining Hammer & Company, Lisa served as the Corporate Senior Vice President of Operational Excellence at Avnet Incorporated, the world's largest business-to-business distributor of electronic components and computer equipment. Lisa's practical experience at Avnet, her engaging background, and her engaging presentation style led her to be the selection as Dr. Michael Hammer's successor at Hammer & Company. Lisa is the co-author of Faster, Cheaper, Better, The Nine Levers for Transforming How Work Gets Done. She's a regular contributor to Business Week, and her columns have appeared in Forbes.com and FoxNews.com. She's appeared as a business expert on Fox News, on the Jim Bohannon Show, the Ron and Sana Show, and other nationally syndicated radio programs as well. Lisa earned her degree from Clarkson University studying engineering and industrial distribution. Welcome to the show, Lisa. How are you doing today?
Thank you. It's wonderful to be with you today.
Well, thank you so much for being our guest. I love to have thought leaders on board. And before we lose our audience here thinking, oh, my God, this is going to be dry and boring because it's about manufacturing and so forth, I want to say that this really, what you're preaching, really hits to the home of how we're going to control costs going forward and the way that businesses are going to succeed in the next part of the 21st century. So it's worth hanging in there and listening, not only for the manufacturing side, but a little bit later on, Lisa, I'm going to ask you to relate it to the services side of the business as well. But let's start with the heart of the core, which is your article on controlling costs. And commodity prices around the world are rising. I mean, if you look at the price of cotton, it's gone through the roof. It's kind of a good news, bad news story. On the one hand, it means there's more global demand for things like cotton, gold, et cetera. On the other side of that coin, the bad news is, of course, that we're all paying more for the commodities. So most companies, when they're faced with this type of a situation, they think of their two basic fallback positions. Either pass the costs on to the consumer, which means for us as consumers, higher prices, or tell their shareholders that profits are going to be lower, and no company CEO wants to do that. So you look at European manufacturing at a company over there called Zara for a third alternative. Tell us Zara's story and how refocusing their business led to higher profits in the ultra-competitive world of fashion.
Yes, thank you. And you're absolutely right. This may sound like it's a little dry, and this is what we wrote our book, Faster, Cheaper, Better, about. And our tongue-in-cheek description is it tells people how to take their head out of their task. And that's exactly what Zara did. They're an innovative company. In fact, the fashion director from Louis Vuitton said possibly the most innovative and devastating retailer, in the world. And that's because they didn't focus on where they're doing the manufacturing. They focused on the end result, and they looked at their processes and said, how can we design to get to the end result, which is make our customers happier, give them what they want, what they're willing to pay for, and enable our business to do well and to grow. And boy, they've hit all three of those marks.
Well, they did hit it out of the ballpark. Now, it should be noted, just for people who are listening, excuse me, that the retailing and the clothing industry, fashion in general, has found it really easy to help cut costs by shipping the manufacturing overseas. In fact, that's what people in business call the low-hanging fruit. And so, as a result, when commodity prices started to increase or when labor prices started to increase, their first thought was, let's export this to Vietnam, let's export our manufacturing to China, and we'll be able to produce our clothing and keep our costs in line. That was interesting for a while. Now, a lot of companies are beginning to regret outsourcing, but that was just sort of the first step in the pie. Zara did not do that. Zara kept its manufacturing right at home in Europe, where, you know, you've got high labor costs and everything else. How did they go about managing their costs while keeping manufacturing in a very, very high cost place to do business?
It's a great question. What others didn't think through, while they may have gotten lower labor costs in Asia, it also forced them then to produce large lots of these items, and then they had to sell these large lots. So they do, Zara does very little competitive analysis in terms of trends. They watch what their competitors do, but they've designed their process to be so agile and so nimble that they see what their competitors are making. They can make it in a shorter amount of time. They produce it in Europe in smaller lots. So that means that when it's in the store and it's available, the consumers know you better buy it if you like it because it's not going to be there tomorrow. And they watch very closely. If something isn't a top seller within, say, 2 to 4 weeks, they're able to pull it. At the end of the season, they have very little clothing left over that they have to sell at a low cost. So while they may have higher manufacturing costs, their forecasting and trending data and analysis and that expense isn't there. They are more quick to react to what the customer wants. They've got nothing left over at the end of the year. They've got higher profits.
Wow. We're talking to Lisa Hirschman, everybody, author, co-author of the book Faster, Cheaper, Better. Lisa, something in that answer struck me as really remarkable, that Zara has a 2 to 4 week selling cycle. If something isn't moving in 2 to 4 weeks, they pull it.
Yes.
I mean, on the one hand, in fashion, that's great because it adds to the scarcity and it makes people want to buy it. But on the other hand, a 2 to 4 week selling cycle, that isn't very long at all, particularly in a retail environment. Does that involve a lot of trucking product back and forth? Is that adding to the cost by having to pull things off of the shelves in the retail stores?
It does, and again, those are individual costs, but it still gets them farther ahead in the long run. And they've been able to design their process so that the way they buy their fabric and the way that they do the dyeing and the cutting and so forth, they have far more control over it. So they essentially don't produce a product until they know what the customer wants. So their risk is actually very low.
That is true. All right, well, looking at Zara, they have very little remnants, things that they have to get rid of at the end of a selling season, whereas some of the others, Louis Vuitton, is, you mentioned their vice president, Daniel Piette, as an example there. I mean, they've got a lot of product that they've got to dump, so it ends up in the factory outlet stores, it ends up online and places like that. So outsourcing has had its downside. You have to manufacture in large quantities. Was outsourcing really only postponing the redesign process, which caused companies like Louis Vuitton to not only lose time because they didn't jump on it right away, but ends up costing them more money in the long run?
Yeah, and I can't speak to Louis Vuitton specifically, but it, for most of the companies that I work, the answer is yes. We have a saying that outsourcing, the intent was my mess for less. And rather than look at what is the proper way to design and to have a process so that you take out steps that aren't necessary, instead we handed it off to someone else to figure it out and expect it to become more nimble as a result. But you're right. There were unintended consequences as a result, higher trucking costs, manufacturing costs sometimes that were maybe the per unit labor, but then some of those countries now have a higher cost of living. And so those rates are going up. We didn't think about pulling back. We didn't think about responsiveness to customers. All of those things added to the cost.
They did. We're talking to Lisa Hirschman, co-author of the book Faster, Cheaper, Better, The 9 Levers for Transforming How Work Gets Done. And Lisa, we've been talking pretty much exclusively to this point about manufacturing, but we're ignoring the largest segment of the United States economy, and that is the service segment. So how do your principles apply to a service business? And I'm just going to throw out there an example company, and you can tell me how you would apply some of these principles. Let's take a telephone tech support. You know, a lot of that got outsourced to India, and then some of it even came back because of the negative unintended consequences that you referred to. But how would you apply your principles to a tech support organization?
Well, one of the things we look at is what exactly does the customer want, and what are they willing to pay for? And you focus on designing not only work, but also your measures along with that. I give a great example for tech support. Many times those people who are handling phone calls are measured on number of calls per day.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as you as a customer, do you really care how many calls they answer in a day?
No, not at all. In fact, it's counterproductive. I want them to be on the line as long as I need them on the line.
Exactly. So if you shift, and this is what we help our clients with, What if you thought about first call resolution that really focused on what the customer needed and the number of times they had to call back was reduced or even non-existent? Now, that gives you more of a performance indicator and makes your customers happier.
All right, so grading them on getting the problem solved first time and getting it solved right the first time is a better indicator on that.
Yes.
All right, that seems fair. So that's how you might apply it to a service business. Now, many of the people listening to the sound of our voice, Lisa, are in business, mostly in an office environment. Some of them are even own their own business. And we're talking about process engineering. I mean, it sounds like a large, daunting project. It requires lots of time, money. If it's a public company, it might require board of director approval. At the very least, it requires senior management buy-in to some of that. So what are some fast, low-cost ways to implement process improvements that might work in a work group or a department?
Oh, great question. First of all, is actually look beyond the department, because if we improve things only within a department, you don't feel it at the bottom line or as the entire enterprise or business needs to feel it. So one of the things we teach people is look across those boundaries. The second is within those departments, I will guarantee you that not everyone is measured on the same result. And as a result, we have people that are, you know, they're not aligned, and we create steps to enforce the alignment. Well, those steps create waste within our process.
All right. Now, slow down, Lisa, because that's a hard concept to understand, particularly because the people that you're talking to are the ones who probably created those processes in the first place. So give us an example of how there might be misalignment, even within a department or certainly between departments on the processes.
I'll give you a great one. As a matter of fact, I'm getting ready to go this evening to the Air Force. And they have a goal of making sure that the soldiers in Afghanistan have the right supplies and the right equipment at the right time.
A good goal.
So, yes. So if the Air Force is transporting by air, hands off to the Navy by sea, and hands off to the Army, who then distributes by land, what would happen if each of those were separate departments and had separate goals? What if the Navy was only looking at how long it takes them rather than what's the day they need it? And so making sure everyone is aligned that way is very significant in getting things done the right way and getting what that customer, or in this case the soldier, needs at the right time.
All right. That makes some sense. So look beyond the department. Look in ways that you can overall make the process. And that's sometimes tough without having senior level support to do that, Lisa. So what are some of the best ways to get director level approval and senior management buy-in to really conduct a full-blown process reengineering? Because there's a lot of fear, a lot of trepidation about changing the way we're doing things, particularly in a tough economy.
You're right. It's uncomfortable. And when people hear change, they automatically think loss. But if you focus on the business results, and that is, what are our customers saying? What do they really want? And what are they willing to pay for? And what does the business need? And I always teach my classes, rally around, I want you to be passionate about process, but I don't want you to be a process zealot. Be a business zealot. This is what it's really about. Business comes first. And so if you talk the senior leader's language, what's the market share? What's the profit potential? What is it going to do with cost? What's it going to do to make our customers happier? And talk their language, then they'll start to see how what you're talking about in terms of process can help them deliver those results.
All right. We're talking to Lisa Hirschman, everybody, author of the book, Faster, Cheaper, Better, The 9 Levers for Transforming How Work Gets Done. Lisa, in the companies that you're working with and the work that you're doing with clients right now, is there any thought or any consideration being given to the externalities of the products or the services that these companies are offering? And a big example, of course, would be the automotive industry with emissions, toxic emissions, that kind of stuff. Is that entering into business leaders' thought processes yet at all and figuring into their reengineering?
Absolutely. In fact, in many of our regulated companies that have to work with regulators, how do you balance with what the customer wants and also with what the regulator wants? And how do we become good citizens, whether it's green products or looking at emissions output? And those become, again, goals or end result measures that you can design towards.
Very cool. We're talking to Lisa Hirschman, everybody, co-author of Faster, Cheaper, Better. Lisa, what do you want readers to take away from reading Faster, Cheaper, Better?
I want them to see that they have a significant role to play in making their businesses better. And if they think beyond individual departments and focus on those end results, not just the financial, but also what it means to make a customer happier, that they are the ones that lead the change. Your employees are looking to them to model the behavior, and they can be significant in the success.
Okay. Lisa, this is real leading-edge stuff, and if people like the sound of what you have to say or if they're intrigued but they want to learn more, where would you direct them to go on the Internet to learn more about you, learn more about Hammer & Company, or learn more about your book?
Our website is the best. It's www.hammerandco.com.
Hammerandco.com. Great, Lisa. Thanks so much. We've been talking to Lisa Hirschman, co-author of the book Faster, Cheaper, Better, The 9 Levers for Transforming How Work Gets Done. Lisa, it's been a real pleasure. Thanks for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you.
Take care.